Good afternoon. Welcome to the Deep Application Management session. My name is Brian Keller. I'm a lead program manager on the Configuration Manager team. I'm actually the lead for infrastructure. So that's hierarchy, site servers, components, content distribution. You're thinking, well, what is, you know, why is this guy sitting up here talking about app management? As you know, the ship cycle for CM12 was a rather lengthy one, about 5 years. Spent a lot of time investing in it, and so you can imagine my role kind of changed over the course of those years. I spent 2 years as the senior program manager for the application management and software distribution feature. So I get really excited when I get to come up here and talk about, I guess, my baby from the early days to you all. So very happy that you're here. Normally this is done in two parts because there's so much to cover. I did the best I could and consolidating those into one session, kind of trying to hit the highlights. If I gloss over something or you feel a little confused about something that I described, feel free to come on up afterward and ask some questions. We can go into anything that might be unclear. So I'd like to give you that opportunity, obviously, after the session is concluded. What I'm going to talk about is software distribution and Config Manager 2012. I'm really going to focus on the application model and the new way of deploying software to your users. I'm not going to focus too much on package programs. I'm sure you're all pretty familiar with that. It's still available in CM12. You'll hear everybody promoting the application model. But don't worry, you still run package programs. There's still a place for them. They're still good for running simple scripts, for rerunning things when you don't need state-based software distribution. So package programs are still in. But I'm going to focus on applications and the app model. We'll talk about how you create those things, deploy them, how you monitor the software distribution. And then I'm going to talk about user device affinity, which is a very important concept that we built into CM12 that's going to enable you some confidence when deploying to users. We have some simple apps, so it's really easy to create an application and get it deployed out, but then you can really apply some complex rules to it if you need to. So we'll talk a little bit about that and talk about how content and apps and operating system deployment all tie together. So why did we develop this application model in CM12? What were we thinking when we moved away from good old package programs? Well, we kind of noticed that the way that end users are doing their work is changing. There's a lot of mobility. Users have a lot of different devices. You may have a lot of different technologies you use to distribute applications. Maybe you're distributing them as virtual apps. Maybe you're distributing them in a remote desktop session. You might be using an MSI in one case, maybe an XE that wraps some other technology in another case. So we recognize that lots of devices, lots of different ways that your apps are changing as well, and we want to be able to accommodate those, and we felt like package and programs just didn't have the smarts that we needed to kind of work in this new environment. So we rewrote what it means to be a piece of software in CM12. And I already mentioned, someone put in there, don't jump off a cliff. Yeah, no, package programs are still there. In fact, you'll be migrating when you do your migration from 07 to CM12. You'll be migrating most of your package programs over to get you started. And then ultimately, I hope that you'll be moving to the new application model for deploying apps. But that's basically why we did it. So this little diagram is showing you traditionally you deploy to systems and then users log in and use those apps. Essentially. Today, we want to make the user the one that you deploy to, and then the rules that you establish within the application model will help define what devices get which software and in what form. So user-centric application delivery, this application model, let me talk a little bit about what makes up what I call the model. I keep referring to this model. What does that mean? Well, it's basically a definition of an application that includes some basic things here. So you'll see there's administrator properties, things that you would do, maybe an internal name you would use or some categorizations that you would apply so that you can help organize the apps within the admin console. Then there's the end user metadata, which is the friendly information that you use to input into the application so that when users go to find software, remember, we have both push software, where it's a kind of a required distribution, but we also have this new pull model through the software catalog. And so within that catalog, users are going to go and they're going to search for apps that have been made available to them, and they're going to want to find them. Well, how can you make it easier for those users to find those applications? Give it a good name, put a nice description, maybe categorize it so it's easy to search and filter for the apps, because your end users will be going into this portal and they'll be looking for apps, and you want to be able to type in some keywords and some search terms and find that. So you have to apply these friendly metadata to the apps. So that's kind of the high-level object that we call an application. In addition, there's the building blocks that make up what some people refer to as the workhorse of the app, and that's the deployment type. Think of it as an installer technology. So the deployment type contains all the information about specific technologies you would use to deploy your applications. Think MSI, for example, or AppV, or maybe an XE, or if you're dealing with mobile devices, potentially a CAB file. So what this deployment type contains is information like a detection method. This may be a new concept for some of you because it doesn't exist in package programs. There's no state-based awareness within the package program that something is already there. Now, you can write some stuff in your scripts to check to see if the app is there already and so forth. But in CM12, we built this detection logic into the model so that the system can always tell whether or not an application needs to be installed, is applicable, or is already present or installed. Interestingly enough, we've been doing this in software updates for a long, long time. Software updates that you would get through the Microsoft Update that flow down through your SUP, which is based on WSUS, those definitions contain prerequisite rules, whether something's applicable on a system. They include a detection method to see whether or not the app that's affected or needs to be patched is present. So that we've had these concepts within Configuration Manager for a long time. And it served us well in being able to determine when should we download updates to apply them, when should we send back compliance information saying, yep, already patched, you're good to go. Right? So we kind of wanted to bring that same compliance and smartness that we had around software updates into the way we deploy software. So we have this detection method that can determine whether app is installed or not, using product codes, using system attributes, things of that nature. And then we have the good old-fashioned install command, which is the command line you would use in order to get the thing installed. Some have command lines. Some technologies have command lines, like MSI, right? MSI exec slash such and such. Some, like AppV, aren't going to have a command line that you're even really aware of. It's just an API that we call to get the app published. But there's a command line for a number of the technologies and some options that you can apply for that command line. The requirement rules, think of those as prerequisites. And I think I have a slide on that a little bit later, so I'll skip over that for now. Then in addition, the application model has a rich knowledge of relationships to other applications. So if I'm Adobe Reader application, maybe Adobe Reader 10, that software may have dependencies on other applications, IE9 potentially, if you want to do some PDF plugins, could have a dependency on the .NET framework, right? In addition, there's another relationship type besides dependencies that we call supersedence, which is the relationship between an app that comes after a previous version. So the supersedence relationship between Adobe 10 and Adobe 9 is pretty clear. 10 replaces 9. And you can develop these, relationships into your model and invoke certain behaviors based on those relationships. And the interesting thing is that the relationships between apps, each app stands on its own. So when you deploy Adobe Reader 10, and it depends on IE9, you can the system will first look at the model for IE9, make sure IE9 is in place and ready to go. That dependency is there, yep. And then Adobe 10 comes in. So each app has its standalone model, but those relationships can be built to provide some extra smarts for your deployment system. So just comparing 2007 to 2012. In 2007, we had package programs. In 2012, we have an application with the deployment types and all the rules built in. For deploying an application, we had the advertisement. We moved to this concept of a deployment. Not significantly different conceptually, just a different name, to be perfectly honest with you. In 2007, we had compliance. Actually, we didn't really have compliance. Did I execute correctly? Did I run? Yep, I ran. Goes in the execution history. Great. But is that app removed later? We don't know. Is the app installed successfully? We think so, based on the status message. But when we come in later to check it out, there's no such facility like that for package programs. In Config Manager 2012, we're constantly evaluating for applicability, for installed state, looking at compliance. Is the app there? Was it removed? And sending back that state information so that you're constantly getting a window into your app deployments. For targeting, who gets it and where can it run? We're looking at, or you were looking at, collections, right? You build some smarts into your collections. Some customers I work with will actually build collections that have the detection built into the query. So, you know, Adobe Reader 10 installed collection, and it goes out and you fills out all the devices that already have it installed. Well, let's not target those, they've already got it, right? In 2012, you don't have to worry about that because the application itself knows whether it's installed or not, and it knows where it's appropriate to install. On Windows 7, for example, with 512 MB memory and a significant amount of disk space to support that application. All those rules are built into the application, not things that you would put in your collection queries in 2012. So user targeting. In 2007, yeah, I can tell you, we had user targeting. Kind of scary, though, if you think about it, because whenever a user would log into any system, that user policy is evaluated and their apps would get downloaded and run for them. Same if I log into a kiosk across campus, or if I'm logging into a server to do some maintenance task. Maybe I'm logging into my friend's system. All of a sudden, all my apps come down. Very scary. Not a lot of confidence there when you deploy to users in 2007. In 2012, we can do user targeting, and we can target specific devices that are users' primary devices, the desktop in their office, their laptop, but not a kiosk and not a server where they're a guest. Right, so we can make determinations about software, put rules on the apps that say only deploy Office 2010 on a user's primary device. Please don't download and install a couple gigs of Office if it's not their primary device where they do productivity work. So that's available. There's a lot more confidence that we put into the system for you to be able to deploy software to users and make sure they get those apps on the devices that are appropriate. So for the client user experience, I think we've done a good job of improving that. In 2007, we had the affectionately called RAP, the Run Advertised Programs. If I was a user, I'd never want to go in there and try to use that. So in 2012, we've developed a couple different end user software applications. One is the Software Catalog, which is that portal that users can go to find and install apps that have been made available to them. We also have Software Center, which is more of a status reporting and notification UI so that you can see what's been installed and what needs to be updated and when the deadlines are. That's for more for the push software, where you're saying this software is required on this system by this deadline. So a couple big improvements in the way that we present management to your end users, making it easier for them, empowering them even to set business hours, to actually set their own primary device rules so they can go into the software catalog and say, this new desktop that I got is my primary device. So there's a lot of flexibility for users, which, of course, those settings and availabilities are all can be admin controlled as well. So you can turn those capabilities on and off. But it's there for you and for your end users. So for content management, it was pretty limited in 2007. In 2012, we have a rich content library that's very smart. It's a single instance storage library on your distribution points. And there's extensive monitoring available within the console so that you can tell whether or not app distributions are making it out to the distribution points that you've sent it to and whether or not they're successfully being deployed out there. So I touched on this a little bit. The key term that we use now is state-based application management. So in 2007, you had the collection rule targeting that I mentioned and status messages. It was a lot of fire and forget. And you know, you would run once, maybe on a schedule. So there wasn't a lot of intelligence to the system. In 2012, we have the state-based application model, which uses detection methods to determine whether something is installed or not. We have a new ability to install and uninstall applications. So you can deploy apps that you would like them to. It's kind of weird to say deploy for uninstall, right? You can say this particular app I want to remove from this collection of users with these rules on these devices. And we can go out, ConfigMan can actually remove software and then report back the compliance. The app not being there is actually a good thing because that was your intent. In other cases where you're installing, the app not being there is a bad thing because your intent was it for, for it to be there. So you can see with the state-based, we do both install and uninstall, and we do regular checks for enforcement. You may hear this referred to as a global evaluation, technical term. I don't know if they document that, but global evaluation is the cycle by which Configuration Manager determines whether or not all the apps that are supposed to be there are still there. Kind of like a software update scan, if you will. We do that by default once every 7 days, and you can configure that. So the takeaway there in yellow is detection method is kind of a new concept, so maybe something to familiarize yourself with. I'll spend a little bit of time during the demo showing you some of the detection methods that are available and what it looks like, just so you can get comfortable with it. But the idea is you want to find registry keys, WMI properties, file version information, product codes, things like that that you would put together that make up whether or not an app is on a system or not. Product code is a big one for MSI. For some other apps, you may need to look at a file version. In some cases, you may need to look at a couple of reg keys to find out the version and the build number and things like that. So requirement rules, this is also a part of that state-based application model, and those requirement rules are essentially prerequisites. Think of them that way. So these are properties of users and or the devices that make delivering software the right decision. So you can set up some rules that say, hey, it's kind of like the on-box requirements for software, like requires this much processor speed and you know, needs this much memory and this much free disk space and runs on Windows 7, 64-bit, et cetera, et cetera. Those types of properties are things that you would think of as requirement rules for software. And we can then use those requirement rules during evaluation when we're deploying software to see, hey, does this system meet the prerequisites? Okay? Now, this requirement rule system, we have a bunch of built-in requirement rules, operating system language, memory, processor architecture, a bunch of stuff. Okay? But we recognize that those might not be exhaustive as far as what you might need in your organization. So we have this concept of what's called a global condition. And a global condition is the attribute behind any requirement rule. And you can create your own. You can customize those. So if you have a corporate registry key that you're always looking at to see if a device is a corporate asset, you can create a requirement rule based on that company registry key and use that as a prerequisite. Don't install the software on personal devices, only on the corporate assets. So I'm going to, as part of the requirement rules, which becomes a custom global condition, we'll now check the registry to look for your company key, and you can create those based on WMI classes, based on registry keys, the existence of keys. You can do comparisons. It's pretty rich and elaborate the way that you can put these things together. So it's really flexible. Ship with a bunch out of the box, but it can be customized. In addition, we have these things called global expressions, which is essentially an expression of global conditions. So you can mix and match these things and apply and or rules to build a pretty complex requirement rule, ultimately. For example, the one I have here on the slide, corporate primary device. You can say memory has to be 1 gig, and there's the and logic, free disk space is 500 MB, and the operating system is Windows 7. And I'm going to also include that corporate device rule, which is based on a reg key, and that has to be true. You can get pretty complicated with these things. You can say and or, and you can have subgroupings, and it gets wild. So you can definitely have some fun with that, but you may need that complexity. We've built a very flexible system. We're hoping you don't need a lot of complexity there, but it's available to you if you need it. I mentioned this early in the presentation, this concept of applications having relationships with other applications in the system. So the two major relationships are dependencies and supersedence. Dependencies are other apps and deployment types that have to be present in order for the application that's currently being deployed to successfully install. .NET Framework needs to be present, IE9 needs to be present. Maybe you want to create a dependency relationship between Link and Office, because most of your users are going to want to have that rich integration. So you'd say, hey, for Link to be installed, I'd like Outlook to be there. It's kind of, they go great together. So there's things that you can do with dependency relationships. Also, that whole and or logical expressions, you can build pretty complex relationships. So in order for this app A to be installed, either .NET Framework 3.5 or 4.0 needs to be present, and IE7 or 8 or 9 needs to be present, things like that. So you get the point. The other relationship that we have is supersedence. And supersedence essentially helps you manage that full application lifecycle. You have an app out there, maybe Adobe Reader 9, you're moving to 10. You need to build that relationship between 10 and 9 that says 10 replaces 9. So any user that goes to the software catalog to get Adobe Reader, just show them 10. We know we have some 9 deployments out there. We're still making it available to some users in our environment, but any new users will see Adobe 10 as the only version of Adobe available. By the way, those that have 9 that we want to get upgraded, please, Config Manager, go out and find every device that has Adobe Reader 9 and automatically upgrade it to 10. So these are some of the advanced actions that Config Manager can take based on you just setting up a simple relationship between Adobe Reader 10 and Adobe Reader 9, for example. So there's a lot of richness in there, and I'll poke around a little bit in the UI during a demo and give you some look at it. The other thing, the reason we built this was obviously mostly for you. There's a little self-serving purpose there as well as a product group, and I'll tell you what. We found early on that we had this great state-based system. So you deploy Adobe 9 and then to the one system, and then you accidentally also deploy Adobe 10. So Adobe 10 comes in, upgrades 9. Our state-based system goes, hey, 9's supposed to be here, puts 9 back. Maybe there's an error, maybe 10 gets removed. Right, so there is this race condition you see in the slide. There's a concept called a race condition where 10 would put down, then 9 would get put down, 10 would get put down. So we want to avoid all that foolishness. And so we're creating that relationship between 10 and 9 allows the state-based system to understand that 10 is supposed to be there, 9 should never be there again. 10 supersedes 9, as an example. Clicker. Okay, let's get into the demo. I think they said I was on 2. I will test out that theory. And maybe I was on. There you go. Yes.
Are there any integration with software licensing in terms of rules and, you know, in determining whether applications can be installed or not installed?
I can talk about some of our plans in that area, integration with AI and things like that. I'd like to discuss that after. I'll be available. I'll stick around after the presentation. But yes, that's a good question. We can talk about that. Thanks. Okay, I'm in. So this is the software library, what we call the Wunderbar. We go into application management. You'll see I've got packages. I've got these global conditions. So I can look at applications. Here's a list of a bunch of applications that were created and built into this system. Some classic package programs from our software catalog. We allow an approval process, so you can deploy an app as available, but say I'll only allow users to install if they request it. So they go into the catalog instead of seeing an install button, which is pretty typical. For the apps where you say needs approval, it'll say request approval. They click, put in some notes, it gets sent off to the console. So that's a concept that I don't really cover in this presentation all that much today, but it's out there. We can talk more after if you'd like. And then here's the global conditions that I mentioned, the foundation for all the requirement rules. And you can see we have a bunch of stuff built in, Active Directory site, CPU speed, even display resolution, free disk space. And then you can create your own, I think, create global condition. This is where you'd create something like my corporate device, and then you might base it on some registry value, let's say string, or I can even browse the registry and pick out the thing. So I think that's pretty cool that you can browse. And you can also browse remote systems, like if you have a gold image and you want to browse for a specific key, you can do that. So you could create a registry key rule. Let me see what else we have that you might be able to be interested in seeing. An Active Directory query. The file system rules are pretty cool because you can do file and you can base it on version and those types of things. So it's a pretty rich system for creating your own rules. I won't do that in the interest of time today. Going a little off script, but what I want to do is create a simple application here. So let's go ahead and create an application. I've got Adobe Reader 9 installed, or created, and now I want to create Adobe Reader 10. I'm moving on. 9 was great, but we're moving to the next best thing, which is Acrobat Reader 10. So what I've done here is I've just browsed to the MSI that I downloaded from Adobe.com or got through my volume licensing deal. Here I've got the UNC path. Now I'm going to click Next. It may take just a moment, but I'll explain what's happening here. So we're actually, we being Configuration Manager, is actually reading the MSI, pulling out some key attributes. The most important one is that detection method. So you don't have to know what the product code is for Adobe Reader 10. We'll read the MSI, we'll pull it out, we'll include that as a detection method in the model. In fact, I think the summary actually shows us what it did. Yes, so here's the product code. Don't want you to have to memorize and copy and paste and mess with that. So we'll pull it out of the MSI. We'll also pull a name from the MSI. And we'll also pull the install context. You know, some MSIs set default as install for just me or all users. That's this property here. So this one is specifically set for all users of a machine. I'll click Next. I can add some additional things here. Here's some of that administrator metadata that I talked about just a little bit ago. So comments, you know, this is our new standard PDF reader. I can put some info in here like Adobe, and that's good enough. I can do some administrative categories that will help me categorize it within the UI. Standard command line we provide. If you need more complex command line switches, you can go ahead and add those. Yeah, go ahead and click Next, and I'm finished. So that was pretty easy. I've just created Adobe Reader 10 from an MSI. Now, the detection method was created, but none of the maybe additional end-user friendly, that friendly metadata I talked about, which would show up in the catalog, that's not there. Any requirement rules that would provide prerequisite information, that's not there. So let's go in and add some things. So as part of creating, oh, I clicked on the wrong one. As part of creating Adobe Reader 10, we create this deployment type. I talked about the app being this high-level object, and underneath it, you can have one-to-many of these deployment technologies. And each DT, as we call it, would be have its own set of rules. That's kind of neat because let's say that for some users, you want them to get the virtualized version under certain circumstances. And in other circumstances, you say just deploy the full MSI. Maybe AppV is great if we detect that they've logged into a kiosk or some server system. So let's send a virtual version down. It'll launch quickly, but it also will leave very little footprint, won't conflict with any of the apps on the system. That'd be great. If it's their desktop or their laptop, let's get the full MSI installed. So you can have multiple deployment types as part of an application with different rules that determine when one technology should be applied to a system over another. So let me go ahead and create some rules in here. And I can go to requirements. I don't have any by default. I'll add a few here. So I'll use total physical memory greater than or equal to 512 MB. That's a nice rule. I believe that's probably the, I think that's the actual on-box requirement for Adobe Reader 10. I'm going to go ahead and say free disk space, 50. It's not very much, but what the heck. I'm also going to say that we only want to put Adobe Reader 10 on our Windows 7 machines. I'm going to say all Windows 7, but you can get pretty granular here, 64 versus 32-bit, service pack level, that type of thing. So I'm just going to click all. This is actually, for me, a big improvement that they have this tree system, because before it was a flat list, and I'd have to walk through, if you saw any of the early versions, the betas, and I have to walk through and find each one and click, 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 click. So now I can do it at all at the high level and go in and make my exclusions if I want to. So that's pretty cool. So now I've added three requirement rules that will be evaluated at runtime to determine whether or not the application is applicable in the sense that the system meets the requirements. Just some other things I'm going to show you. Return codes, for example. You can customize the return codes, and Config Manager will treat these return codes that we get back with certain behaviors. You can create your own. Let's say that a typical return code that you see means that it was a transient failure. You want it to retry quickly, so maybe return code 5 is a special return code, and it's a fast retry. Fast retry is a facility that we have where we'll try again very quickly to install if there's a failure. So you got some flexibility there. Here's where you'd add some dependencies, building that out. I won't do that right now. And here's the detection method. So we automatically populated this with the product code. I could add additional attributes, file system attributes, registry attributes, even other product code information, although that wouldn't make much sense. And then I can create relationships. I won't do that right now, but I could create relationships, ands and ors, among these different system attributes to determine whether something's installed. Most of the time, it's pretty simple to tell if something there is there, but some software, it's very elaborate to tell version to version. You might have to look at a registry key, look at a number, and then compare that, and it can get kind of wild. So with that, we give you some flexibility. For the interest of this demo, I'm going to trust the product code is enough here. So let's apply. And there you have it. What I'll do is I'll add a few more things here. Let's go in. There's a little time. Properties. Let me show you the catalog. So before I was at the deployment type level, now I'm back up in the application. And so the application is that high-level object that the users see. A user doesn't know how an app is being delivered to them. They just see the app. And it's the rules that you build determine how the app is delivered. They probably don't know AppV from MSI. I mean, they might. But they won't know AppV from MSI. They'll just see that Adobe Reader 10 is now an icon on their desktop. They click on it, they run Adobe Reader, and they get their PDF files read, and it's no problem. So that the deployment technologies you use in those rules are all kind of under the covers. They're not exposed to your end users. But what is exposed to your end users are things like this localized name. Maybe you think X is confusing. People won't know what the heck that is, so you change it to 10. I was a little confused at first, to be honest. It's our new standard PDF reader. It took the administrator comments and put it in here as a smart default. It's not very smart. I'm going to say, you need this new app for reading PDF files, something like that. This is a generic icon that will show up in the software catalog. I can actually customize that. See what I have here for icons. I know I had some icons in here. Here, say, this is the old Adobe Reader 9 icon, but what the heck? That'll be good enough. So I can add that icon. And the other thing I want to do is I want to go ahead and create a supersedence relationship. I talked about that, so let's go ahead and do that. Since this is 10, it's going to supersede 9. So I go in here, and I browse to my list of applications. I find 9. I'm going to supersede. Now it picked up that I had a Windows installer Adobe Reader 9 deployment type as part of Adobe Reader 9 application, and by default we don't do any replacement. Here I'm going to go ahead and replace that with the Adobe Reader 10 Windows installer deployment type. Now you're saying, why do I have to pick these deployment types? Well, think of a scenario where you have Adobe Reader 9 MSI deployed, but now you've moved on to AppV, app virtualization. So you want to be able to replace the MSI that was installed of Adobe Reader 9 with the virtual Adobe Reader 10. Those two technologies aren't going to know anything about each other. All right, so you actually can have both on the system, 9 and 10, virtual 10 and MSI 9. So you want to set up a relationship where other technologies don't have to be similar in order to replace each other in a supersedence relationship, because our system knows how to handle that. Now, if I were to select, say if I had an AppV here, I would choose uninstall, because I want ConfigMan to remove the physical Adobe Reader 9 that was deployed via MSI before I put down the virtual 10. Because virtual 10 installer doesn't know how to upgrade 9. Now, in the case of MSI to MSI, with Adobe, they actually are a really good vendor. They do a great job of build-to-build upgrades across their version. So if you had 9 there, especially in later times, they have a 9, you come in with 10. 10 actually will upgrade 9, maintain all the user settings. It's pretty nice. So you may not have to have it uninstall. For the purposes of this demo, I'm actually going to show you an uninstall, because I mentioned the app model in Config Manager can do both install and uninstall. And so by defining an uninstall command line, ConfigMan can actually remove software before laying down new ones. So it's just a decision you get to make there. So I'm going to go ahead and create that relationship, say Adobe Reader 10 MSI replaces Adobe Reader 9 MSI, and have Config Manager uninstall the old version if it's there before deploying 10. Okay, so that should take care of that. And I think I've shown you everything I want to show you. So now I've taken a simple app that I created in maybe a three-step wizard, and I've actually made it more rich. I've added requirement rules, I've reviewed the detection method, I've added supersedence relationship, I've added some end-user metadata to make it more friendly and describable in the catalog, and so I'm good to go now. I see a hand back there. Let's wait till the end. Come on up. I'll stick around as long as you guys want and answer questions then. Okay, so let me get out of this now. Go back to the PowerPoint. Click it. All right. So content distribution, I'll spend a couple slides on that. So content distribution is pretty neat in 2012. It's much improved. So we can tie content distribution to collections for a workflow optimization. So for example, if you deploy Adobe Reader 10 to a collection of users, you can associate distribution points with those users, and content will automatically be distributed out to those distribution points in preparation for your deployment coming down. So that's pretty neat. The distribute content wizard, you can actually distribute content outside of actually deploying applications, just pre-staging, if you will. I shouldn't use that concept because we have another concept of pre-staging, but essentially pre-deploying that content out to distribution points before you even deploy the actual application itself to a collection. We have this content library, which is a single instance store library, so we share files across apps. It's a fairly smart system. So it reduces the amount of disk space you need on your distribution points. And we now have bandwidth controls on remote distribution points. So a lot of cases where you would need a secondary site to control the downward flow of traffic, you can now do that with distribution points using bandwidth scheduling and throttling. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. Within the console, we have very rich monitoring that allows you to see the progress of a distribution, know when the app is actually there in place. If you deploy out to thousands of systems, you'll see the green slowly make its way around the pie chart. So when I was out on some visits with our TAP customers, it's our Technology Adoption Program customers, we did some pretty large-scale deployments, and it was really nice that I didn't have to go into Disk Manager log and try to figure out what the heck's going on with this distribution. I could come here and monitor that from within the console. So I'm pretty happy about that. We also have this concept of validation, where we can schedule to validate content. We know what's supposed to be there, and we go make sure that all the files are intact and everything's looking good on a distribution point based on what's been placed out there. So that's another feature we have. So the deployment replaces the concept of an advertisement in 2007. And it's created when you deploy an app to a collection. So I'll do that in a demo in just a moment. So you only deploy to a collection once because it's state-based, so you don't have to send it to the same collection over and over, get it to try to run, rerun. I mean, you send out this app, it's supposed to be there for those users, and ConfigMan takes care of making sure it gets there. We have two deployment purposes, as we call them. I think required is you're pushing out on a schedule. Somebody really needs software, needs to get there. Available is, hey, I'm going to make this available to a broad set of users. They may or may not need it, but if they do, they can go to that catalog and search for it and install it on their own. Two types of actions I mentioned, we can install and uninstall software. You don't make available and uninstall, right? That's kind of the one combo that you don't have, but you certainly, in a push installation, you can push something for removal or uninstall, or you can push it for install. So that's certainly available. Application evaluation flow. So you have a new policy, you want to install an app on a schedule. So the first thing it's going to check on the system if it meets those requirements that I showed you. Disk space, memory, all of that. If it, I thought I unbuilt this. This is kind of a, it's difficult to build through this. So if the requirements aren't met, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to install it, it's not going to even download. That's the nice thing. Package programs, a lot of times you have to download the whole package, and then it runs, and then, oh, sorry, can't work. Now you've just spent a lot of time downloading something, using up bandwidth, right? We have a very lightweight model of metadata within policy that comes down and does this whole check before we even download one file of Office 2010, 2 gigs. Okay, so that's neat. If the requirements are met, we check to see, is it installed already? We don't want to download all this content if it's already installed. If it's already installed, we stop. Okay, now we check dependencies. Are the dependencies there? If they're not there, we can install the dependencies automatically as part of that deployment. Then, ultimately, if the dependencies are installed or we go ahead and install those dependencies, you come around now to the app gets installed. So I mentioned this user device affinity. It's a key feature. because it allows you to set up a relationship between a user and the primary devices where they do work. So you define that relationship. It makes sure that you don't have that problem with previous versions of Config Manager where you deploy to users. You probably weren't doing that. But if you were to deploy to users, the software would show up anywhere the user logged in. So we support having a single primary user to a primary device. You can have multiple primary devices for one user, so a user has 3, 4, 5 systems, or you can have multiple primary users of a single device. How can you set it? There's a lot of ways, actually, to set up user device affinity. So let's just read a few off. We have a usage threshold where we can say so many number of logins. You can see that from the image there, hopefully, and when they last logged in. So there's actually a way to import those relationships from, say, a CSV file. Import, maybe you get a manifest that says all these users use these devices, and we can automatically set that through an import. When you're doing operating system deployment, you can set the primary device property at provisioning time. During the mobile device enrollment, it happens. The user can go and enroll themselves or say, this machine is my primary device. I'll show that in a minute. You can also just manually go in there and make that relationship within the console. There's a client agent setting, which I'll show you, which allows you to set some of these thresholds and also to allow users to set their own primary device. You can turn that on or off, and I'll demonstrate that in a moment. So the application catalog, I've referenced this a few times here in the presentation so far. You publish software to this catalog, users go in, find software, and install it. It's pretty simple. And I'll be able to show you that in a moment as well. I think next I have a flow here. So when the user clicks install, it's kind of geeky, but the user launches that website. Then they click install. The website makes sure that Melissa has permissions to install. We get the client ID, hand it off to the server. Then we retrieve the policy. The client then evaluates all the requirements, the prereqs, does the detection method check, that whole flow I just showed you a moment ago. Then the website goes ahead, if it passes all the checks, initiates the installation, and then when the agent completes the installation process and then sends back status, actually state, saying yes, installed. And that's when your monitoring will come up and you'll start seeing green and you'll know that a user has installed that app. And we'll click through this. I just talked through it and we have all these arrows going everywhere. And a little thing installing, it's pretty neat. And there it is. Okay, this is what I've been waiting for. Let's get in there and actually show it to you. I'm gonna find the right one this time. Okay, I created this application. Let's deploy this thing now. Oh, first thing I wanna do is show you the catalog. This is my Win 7 client. And I've already launched it, and you can see I have Adobe Reader 9 here that's available. And folks have assumably been installing it and using it, and that's great. I've got a bunch of other applications here. Notice here's some categories. You set those in that friendly app metadata in that application catalog tab I showed you. You can set up some categories and assign categories. Here is if you do have apps that require approval, you can view your requests. I'm not sure I have any here, and that may have been a mistake. See, I broke my rule. I never clicked on that when I was preparing the demo. That's fine. So I'm going to freeform here. I feel comfortable, maybe too comfortable with the catalog. So anyway, I have a list of software. I can actually do a search. Let me see. I want Adobe, and I'll click search. So this isn't just going to key off the name, but it'll key off keywords, the description. So it's going to do a pretty rich search on applications. Got two here, Flash Player and 9. Also, if I go to My Devices, you're going to see a list of the primary devices that I have. And also, this setting is managed by your IT department. Ah, shoot. So my IT department doesn't allow me to set my own primary device. And that doesn't make me happy. So what I'm actually going to do is complain to someone, and finally they're going to go in to the client agent settings. I'll show you that. And go to user device affinity and allow users to define their primary devices. So this is a setting you can turn on or off. Here's some of that threshold information you can provide. Threshold is in minutes. The usage threshold you can set in days. And you can automatically configure user device affinity from this usage data. So once they meet those thresholds, you can automatically create a relationship if you allow it. So I've gone ahead and allowed that. I don't know how long it takes to take effect. It should be pretty fast. Let's go back in there. Yep, so now it's changed. So this computer is not set as your primary computer, but your administrator might actually automatically install applications or make them available to your primary computers. Okay, so I may choose to make that my primary device. I'll go back in here, and I'll show you the user that's logged into that client is the administrator user, this individual here. So I can go ahead and look in the admin console at primary devices. Here's some of that usage information. The Win 7 client that I was on a moment ago is called FLA Client Demo. And that one looks like the administrator is logged in 10 times, that administrator user. And it was pretty recent that they logged in. This is probably their primary device. I could actually add it this way, just simply add it, or that usage threshold could be met and it would automatically get created. But the other thing I can do is I can go back, and since I allow my users to do it, just rely on the user to say, yep, this is my primary device. I want to get that software deployed to me that's made for my laptop and my desktop and some of my other primary devices, my tablet potentially. So by clicking that, that should show up in just a moment in the console as being set as a primary device now. So I talked about search devices. Here's some stuff. Let's go back now. The reason I showed you this is Adobe Reader 9 is available, but we create a supersedence relationship between 10 and 9. So as soon as I deploy 10, 9 will no longer be available. Even though there's an active deployment that may be working in your environment, when users go to the catalog, they only see the latest version. And you can actually control that, and I'll show you where. So you can have multiple versions available to your users. Most of the time, you might want to have just 10 show up. So let's go back here to the server. I'll test my luck on this and say that it happened quickly. It did. So now you saw that that client is now listed as a primary device for this user. And the affinity type, think of how this happened, was that it was defined from the catalog by the user. So that's here. If it was defined via threshold, you'd see that. If it was defined some other way, you'd see that as well. So I'm going to actually go back into the software library, and I'm going to go ahead and deploy this out. And I'm going to choose just all users. I'm going to make it available to all my users in the catalog. Pretty common app. Click Next. Now here's where I can add it to a distribution point. So I'm going to automatically distribute the content as part of this deployment. I could have done it ahead of time using the distribute content action or based on that collection DP relationship. But I'm going to go ahead and just add it as part of my deployment. I'll make it install as available. Now here's an interesting one. Automatically upgrade any superseded versions of this application. So what that means is that I'm making this available, but anywhere that it's found, that is the older version is found, we treat it like a push install. So it's almost like automatically upgrade anyone that has 9, but anyone that doesn't have Adobe Reader at all, just make it available in the catalog. So it's kind of a dual purpose deployment here. Available to any new users, push upgrade to anyone that's already got it. Pretty flexible. I'm not going to do that here, but you can definitely set that up. Here's some schedule. I think it'll be pretty much available right away. Here's the notifications that you can show when something is deployed. We'll skip through that. Mom alerts, don't care right now. Clicking Next. So now I've created a deployment. So now the first thing I need to do is I know this thing isn't going to be available until that content makes its way out to the distribution point. So one thing I'm going to do is check on the progress of the content being distributed, and hopefully it happens rather quickly. Should happen pretty fast. Let's see. Where did that go? Oh, because it happened. It got moved in the filtered. Oh, it's filtered by compliance. That tricked me. So quickly, that content was distributed, and now it's successfully there. If I had clicked view status when it was in progress, you would have seen some information about specifically where in the process that content was and being deployed. So this monitoring is pretty comprehensive, but we can see it was successfully distributed to the distribution point. Now I know that it's available for my users and it's a go. So let me go back out to the catalog. And let's see if that one, this is going to show up. It sometimes takes, there's a little latency. Ah, not too bad. So now you can see Adobe Reader 10 is available and 9 is filtered out. Where was that? Oh, let me show you that checkbox really quick, where you would say, hey, show all versions. Because I know in some environments you may want to have the user, a sophisticated user, may have certain needs for older versions. You want to make that available. So if I go to supersedence, it's kind of hidden down here. Allow users to see deployments for this app and all the apps it supersedes in the catalog. So that's where they could see Adobe 8, 9, 10, even though there's a supersedence relationship, you may want them to have the option to install older versions. In this case, I did not check that box, and so now it's out there, and it's the only thing that a user sees, even though I have an active deployment for 9. So go back to the client. And just because I've superseded it, since the user hasn't chosen to install Adobe Reader 10, and I didn't check that box to force upgrade anyone that has 9, then oops, it's 9 supposed to be there? I thought 9 was installed. That was a mistake. Let me get 9 on there. I'm going to do this the old-fashioned way. When I was resetting up my demo, I didn't put 9 down. So let's do that. Now in 7 days, because I have an active deployment for 9, based on the global evaluation cycle, ConfigMan would have reapplied that based on the state. Unfortunately, when I was cleaning up my system for the demo, I didn't put 9 back on. So that would happen automatically, but we're not going to wait 7 days. I'm going to go ahead and just get that installed. Hopefully it won't take very long. It's pretty fast, I think. Now notice, this is also a neat opportunity to demonstrate the state-based nature of Config Manager, because Configuration Manager now technically did not install this app, right? I'm installing it manually on the system. So what happens is, Configuration Manager, there's no execution history. We don't care whether we put it there or not. We only use the app model to detect whether the app is there. So it doesn't matter that we deployed it at all. We just check to see if 9 is there using that detection method. If it is, we don't do anything. In the case of supersedence, we'll uninstall and so forth. So I don't know how long that'll take, but in the interest of time, oh, that's probably pretty fast. I've run out of filler, but fortunately, I think it's almost done. There's the icon. We're good to go. Sorry about that. That wasn't so bad. So here's the thing, though. Since 9 is there, and I have an active deployment here for 9 to, I believe, all users, while 10 is available in the catalog, we're still going to treat 9 as the thing that user wants, the software that they're supposed to have on their system, and we're going to do that check and evaluation and provide status and all of that. So now if I go back to the client and I go to 10 and say I want to install 10, go ahead and do that. Want the latest and greatest. The first thing it's going to do is connect to the server, prepare the install, and do that evaluation check. It's going to say, hey, does it meet those requirements that I set? The free disk space, the memory, the operating system version. It's going to detect, hey, is Adobe 10 already there? It's actually also detecting now that 9 is there. Ooh, I supersede 9. This is exciting, right? Now it's going to download, and it's actually going to, hopefully I can get there quick enough, it's going to uninstall 9 within Config Manager. Adobe 10 didn't do that. ConfigMan removed 9 and is now putting 10 on the system. That's part of that supersedence relationship. And then I get a little notice saying, yep, your software's there. So pretty cool. I'm very happy that we have this supersedence relationship within the product, because I think it provides a lot of flexibility for your app lifecycle. So I showed UDA, showed you the app deployment catalog. Let's pop out to the slides again and proceed there. So I talked earlier about how the app is this high-level concept, and there's these deployment types or workhorse installers that sit underneath it conceptually, if you will. And we can have multiple deployment types as part of an application. And there's some benefits to having that. A lot of times, an app might have multiple processor architecture versions. So there might be an x86 version and an x64 version. And you want to have an app, which is my application, but you want to smartly detect whether you're deploying on a 64-bit system or an x86 system and invoke the right installer. So that's one reason why you might have multiple deployment types for a processor architecture, for two different pieces of content for different architectures. I've seen that done. The other, sometimes vendors will put out software that there's different binaries for each language. So you use that operating system language rule and have multiple deployment types for each language you're deploying. And then our requirement rules will check to see, hey, is this OS a German? Okay, let's deploy the German version. If it's, you know, French, we'll deploy French. English, English. So there's different places where you might need it. There may be user situations where you want to deploy a VDI, like a remote desktop version of an app, or maybe a virtualized version of an app versus deploying a traditional MSI. So those are decisions you can make by using multiple deployment types. Now, within Config Manager, we have some built-in ones. We've got the MSI, the script, think anything you can execute on the command line. AppV, we have the Windows Mobile and Nokia deployment types. And then coming in SP1, I'll talk about that in a little bit, we'll have Windows 8 app deployment types. We'll have Mac deployment types. So this is a system that is pretty extensible that partners and Microsoft themselves can add to. So as new technologies come on board, we can add to the capabilities of the application model. For example, Citrix is one of our close partners. They've created a Zen app deployment type, and that's going to be coming soon. So that's another deployment type that would show up. So in 2012, we have some changes in AppV. We're using the new app model for AppV. It's not the package program implementation you have in 2007 R2. We've got some support, obviously, for dependencies, which comes natively with our app model. Some improved updating behaviors. We have selective publishing now, so you can go in and selectively publish within a package what apps you want to show up. So let's say you have Office 2010 virtualized, and you can selectively publish. I just want Word and Excel to go out to those users. And those are the only icons that would show up on their desktop. Some improvements around streaming, and some of the new integration in 2012 requires AppV 4.6. So, not very obvious, but I put a little box in the corner of each one of these saying this is coming in SP1. So all of this stuff I'm about to talk about is new in SP1. So we have Windows 8 applications, the Metro style apps that you hear about. There'll be a new deployment type so that you can use that to sideload Windows 8 apps in Windows 8 to tablets and desktops and laptops, wherever Windows 8 resides. We'll have new requirement rules built in for Windows 8, so you can make some decisions there. So in essence, we'll have support for that. In addition, we have this concept of what's called a deep link deployment type. So that's where you can reference from Config Manager an application that's in the store. So instead of actually having physical binaries, pushing them out and making them available and installing them on a system, it's essentially a reference in the catalog when they say, I want this app. It'll take them out to the store, and the user can then install directly from the store. So you can deep link an app, but there's no content associated with it. That's coming in SP1 of ConfigMan 2012. Support for Mac, I mentioned this. So we have a new deployment type for Mac OS X, and we support different package types, the DMG, MPKG, PKG, and .app files. So you can use those. We have a utility that you use to actually package up Mac. And the reason we have that utility is because we want to be able to pull out detection methods and do that smart stuff that we do with MSI and do that with Mac. And it's very difficult for someone to extract that information manually, so we've created a tool that outputs all of the files in this thing called .cmmac, and that's what you deploy. It's basically a wrapper, and it brings the content down and installs it on a OS X system. So let me go back in really quick and show you what it looks like to add a deployment type. I'm not going to add one of these new SP1 deployment types, but I'll show you how easy it is to quickly add a second deployment type. And I think Adobe Reader 9, I might have an AppV version, so let's do that. So I have Adobe Reader 9. here, and I have one deployment type, which is the MSI. I can simply go to Create Deployment Type, Browse. I've got some stuff in here. Let's go to 9. I've got the actual SFT, I believe. Where's the manifest? No, the manifest is not in there. Let's try this one. Nope. Thought I had one in there. Oh, the filter. Oh, that's a bug. Did I create a... Oh, I didn't create an app B. There, thank you. Got to do my drop down. It's getting late in the day. So, app V. Now I'm going to look for the app V. Excellent. And there's the manifest. Thank you. So that's what we use to actually extract all the information. It's pretty fast. We can grab the detection method. And actually, AppV packages have requirement rules built in. So we read those and we convert those to our requirement rules within the model. So if you have OS requirements built into your AppV packages, we'll pull those out. This is the download. And here's all the rules that it pulled out. It's just showing you. You can delete those if you're like, yeah, those are old, or I want to add new ones. Here you could actually add additional rules, like the free disk space, things of that nature. I can add dependencies at this time and click Next. And I now created a second deployment type, which is the app virtualization deployment type. So see, I have multiple of these, and I can actually go in and make additional changes. I could add requirements, go do dependencies. Here's the selective publishing. Adobe probably has one. Oh, there's three. There's the AR installer and some other things. I can say, I don't want all that crap on the system. I just want 9 icon, so I can go do that. If you imagine something like Office, let's see, I think that's a virtual, that's even based on our AppV 5.0. It can be pretty gnarly. Look at all those. Might want to weed those out. So that's the beauty of having selective publishing within the config man console. So that's how you add additional deployment types. I could just keep adding them and put rules on them, and the model would respect those rules. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the AppV that's coming in Config Manager SP1. So this is another one of those new and SP1 things. So we have support. You're going to need AppV 4.6 SP2. That's needed to support Windows 8 and get the same feature functionality. So that'll be a requirement. We also are now in SP1 doing testing and supporting AppV 5.0. And we'll actually have a new deployment type for 5.0 because it's fairly different than 4.6. And the main new feature compared to 4.6 is, I'm not allowed to say composition, but it's still on there. It's called connection groups. And I'll explain what that is. So AppV 5.0 connection groups. So typically, when you virtualize applications and deploy them, they're isolated from each other. So that's a good thing most of the time, except when you're virtualizing, say, Outlook and Link, or Word and Visio, and you want to get that integrated experience where I take a Visio diagram, I paste it in Word, I use it to talk to my folks, and then I want to drill in directly into that chart, say, in Word, and go right into Visio and make changes. That you can't do when they're virtualized, because those two apps don't know anything about each other. And so in AppV 5.0, with these connection groups, you can develop connection groups that will bundle or allow those two apps to communicate. So whereas before they wouldn't be able to talk, they now can talk in the same, what we call, virtual environment. Some examples there, Link and Office, Excel and Visual Studio. Word and Visio is something that I've also played around with. So it works really well, and it actually helps kind of give you some more flexibility around having virtualized applications and all the benefits there, but being able to create those connection groups. And you create those from within the Config Manager console. It's not something you would do within AppV. So I'll just show you real quick. Let me pop out here just so you see where it is. You see this thing called Virtual Environments. And you can create one named Productivity. And if I go into the properties, I can see that I have, and I've already created one. I've got Office 2007, which is virtualized Office, and I have Visio, and I've created a connection group that includes both of these. So when these are deployed, Config Manager also deploys that virtual environment, that connection, that concept, and those apps will load together and work together. That's new in 5.0 and something that we natively support in SP1. So one more thing I want to show you is PowerShell, and I'm definitely going to have enough time for questions afterward. So I'm going to move pretty quickly, but we have PowerShell support coming in SP1. We have commandlets for you to be able to do standard administrative tasks that you would be able to automate. It's not the SDK that you may know about. It's a simple PowerShell experience, and we align with all the general PowerShell conventions. So if you need to do your traditional scripting, I want to create a bunch of collections, or I want to automate the creation of apps, moving them from one environment to another, and as part of my testing process, you can all do that in PowerShell coming in SP1. It's a pretty neat improvement. I'm happy to be able to announce that it's going to be available in SP1. So it's a little odd that in the app management session, I'm going to show you PowerShell, but I kind of wanted to add this in there as part of what's coming in SP1. So I'll do a quick demo of that just to show you how it works. And that'll be the end, and we can dive into some questions. So there's a lot of typing involved. So I created a little simple script which has all the commands I'm going to need. So I'll go ahead and first tell you about those. So first of all, we have an all systems collection. So what I'm going to do in this example is I'm going to create a collection using PowerShell and add direct members, clients that are direct membership. So all systems, I'm going to get the device collection all systems. I'm going to create a new collection called My Devices, and I'm going to limit it to the all systems collection. Then I'm going to read in from a CSV file a list of direct members for that collection, and then I'm going to add those direct members into this new collection that I create. The CSV file that's referenced here has a list of devices. It's pretty simple. I'll just go in and show you. Here it is. The name of the resource is, these are actual Win7 machines that I'll add as a direct member. So by grabbing this script, I'll just copy this now. The nice thing is that you can connect to PowerShell right here from the admin console, and it'll already create that connection to the provider and database and everything that you need to run these commands. So you won't have to do any of that setup. It simply creates it right here. So the next thing I can do, I want to show you nothing up my sleeve. I didn't do the nothing up my sleeve thing. So I go into device collections, and you can see I don't have anything my CSV devices, which was the name of the collection. So I'm going to go in here in PowerShell. Paste that in, and that's going to be ready to go. Fire away. And now, I don't know how long it'll take to actually refresh. It takes just a minute. There it is. It's pretty fast. My devices from CSV. That's a new collection that I created using PowerShell, and if I go in there, I can see it added direct membership rules for those three clients. So I just scratched the surface on what you can do with PowerShell and all the different commandlets that are available. Commands. So, but you think about the possibilities there with creating applications and collections and automating things that might take a long time in the console. So that's something new in SP1 we're pretty excited to be able to talk to you about and get your feedback on. So with that, thank you so much for sticking it out with me this afternoon. This is a summary of everything I talked about. I'm not going to walk the whole list. Definitely check out some other sessions. I think we're almost done with the Config Manager sessions, but we do have one tomorrow, which is client management for Windows 8, in Windows 8 timeframe. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you.